Hello, this is the trimmed down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life. Maybe the first track they ever heard, the first track they may have brought, to several tracks that mark moments in their life, as well as one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest today is Anna Tyler, who is the current chair of the RNIB, having joined the Board of Trustees in July 2020. Prior to joining the RNIB, Anna was the chair of a London-based charity, Vision Foundation. Anna is a long-term advocate for the greater inclusion of disabled people, and especially blind and partially sighted people. Anna is visually impaired herself, and in her personal blog, The Blind Truth, she shares a wry look at living a colourful life with limited sight. In Anna's Tracks of My Life, we will go on a journey from her early life growing up in the home counties to teenage life, striking out on her own and taking the world on for size, reflecting on life and bringing up her son as a visually impaired single parent, and her first experience of being actively involved as a campaigner. Working hard during the 80s and 90s to support her son, Anna's love of Bulgaria and her connection with the work of the charity Keren Dom, which supports children with complex needs and their families in Bulgaria. Finally, Anna will share why it is so important to keep those long-term friendships and relationships going over the years. Hello, Anna, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, Toby. Thank you for inviting me.
Anna, we start with a theme to that classic film, The Sound of Music, which I think takes you back to the time when you were growing up. And I wondered what life was like back then for you with your mum and dad.
Yes, I know it sounds like a really kitsch choice, doesn't it? But actually, it almost is the soundtrack of my early life. And life was really pretty idyllic. We grew up in the countryside. We had freedom to roam. And we did. My brother and I cycled around the countryside. We swam in the local stream. There were freshwater oysters in the stream. There were fish in the stream. And we covered huge distances on our bicycles, on foot. We played games in the garden. We had a camp. We climbed trees. And to some extent, we ran wild. And I was afforded this enormous privilege by my parents, who to some extent exercised enormous trust in my ability to make judgments, to stay safe and look after myself, and at the same time didn't want to overprotect or cosset me because I couldn't see very much. And I'm just so grateful for that. And when I look back at it now, it feels like a time of almost, you know, this sort of sunny uplands. And I'm sure it wasn't always like that. But we lived in this ramshackle house in the country, which was filled with dilapidated antiques. And the floors were slightly rotten. If you leant back on your chair, you were likely to go through the kitchen floor. And many people did. We had lots and lots of animals. And for anyone who knows me, they'll know that I'm completely obsessed with dachshunds. We had many, many dachshunds as I was growing up. The small dog with the big dog mentality. We sailed at weekends. My father and my much loved Uncle Joe, who is my father's younger brother, they bought a hull for a Contessa and spent a few years fitting it out. And then we sailed across the channel in it. And I remember my brother and I being picked up from school on a Friday evening and waking up in France the next morning. I remember my father tying our underwear to a piece of string on the back of the boat and saying, this is what we're going to do. We're going to launder your clothes this way. And having spent 12 hours in seawater, they would come out like cardboard. But it was just tremendously good fun. We swam off the boat and we had a really adventurous time, and we knew we were loved and adored, all of us. And there were interesting people around us. It was a very wonderful time, and I was very fortunate that I had a really great friend who lived just down the road. Our mothers met when they were pregnant, and my friend Maria and I have been friends all our lives, so nearly 60 years. There's 3 months between us, and our friendship is undimmed. It's just a wonderful start in life that I remember. My mother, I think, being a central figure, she really enabled all her children, but particularly, I think, for me, she always said to me, you can do anything you like in life except be a taxi driver or a brain surgeon. And that mantra has served me very well. She had great faith in my abilities and was always thinking, well, if you can't do it this way, how can you do it? You have to think round the challenge. And that's how everything was positioned. And I think that was a really good start in life. The reason I've chosen this particular piece of music is because I remember when The Sound of Music came out, my mother, who was a great admirer of Christopher Plummer, shall we say, took me to see this film. I remember dressing up for the occasion and going to the ABC cinema in Winchester. That cinema isn't there anymore, but the sight of Julie Andrews coming over the top of the hill singing in this way made such an enormous impression on me. The drama, the cataclysmic events surrounding this story and the love and friendship at the centre of it made a very powerful impression on me. And I can never go past what was the sight of the old ABC cinema without imagining Julie Andrews trapped in there, sort of battering her way out of people's kitchens and bathrooms in small pieces. And really, I think it was just such a joyous song. And I remember my mother being in the kitchen singing this music. We used to sing a lot of musicals as I was growing up. My mother adored them. And we were very much encouraged in this. And I do remember dancing around the kitchen with saucepans and wooden spoons. And it was all very joyous and much laughter.
The opening theme from The Sound of Music there with Julie Andrews, and I think we can all see her on that mountaintop singing her heart out. Anna, for your next track, you have chosen Mamma Mia by ABBA, and I think this takes you back to life striking out on your own and experiencing the whole world of life and what's out there. Where were you at this time, and what was life like back then for you?
Gosh, so this takes me back when this came out to, I suppose it was around the mid-70s. And I'd been away at a school for visually impaired children for 4 years, and it's not an experience I particularly remember with great joy. But I did make independent friendships there, that some of which have endured to this day. I was desperate to come home and be at home. My parents, who believed they had done the absolute right thing in sending me away in the first place, now brought me back because it was the right thing to do. And I went to school locally. I went to it was a very unusual school. It was a school called Stanbridge Earls, which is now closed. And when I went there, it was a boys' school. So all my friends were boys. And I don't know if you can think back to that time, Toby, when you were sort of 12 years old, girls were possibly not the people you wanted to sit next to in class. And I remember my very first English lesson, sitting down next to two people, and they kind of backed off, and I said, "Don't worry, I won't bite." And we became firm friends. We did everything together. It was a very wonderful time in life. You felt like you were no longer a child, but not quite an adult. And we listened to music, we talked about ideas, we went around the countryside together, we walked miles, and there was a particular bluebell wood that we went to very regularly. And it was just such an adventure as you stretch and you push at the boundaries from childhood into adulthood. And music, you know, it provided a sort of soundtrack for that time. I think also I probably had an aspiration to be the fifth member of ABBA, if they would have let me. I really sort of fancied myself fronting this music. ABBA's often thought of as disco music, but if you listen carefully to the rhythms and the complexity of what has been produced here, it's immensely clever. I think something that has endured for a very good reason, and it still gives me pleasure to listen to. And sometimes when I'm in my kitchen, I might command my Alexa to play a bit of ABBA so I can dance around the kitchen and feel the joy.
I think you're right, because I think if you listen to some of the ABBA lyrics, you know, the songs and the lyrics and the stories are quite sometimes dark, and you've got this upbeat kind of disco music going on, and if you listen to the lyrics, you think, hang on a minute, there are some really fantastic sort of stories there.
It's immensely cleverly done, and I think I think ABBA is a greatly underrated group. But this very much reminds me of a time spent particularly with my friends Rory and Michael, who were my great friends that I made at Stanbridge. Again, you know, my friendship with Rory endures to this day, and I think we'll revisit this a little bit later in our conversation.
Have you been to see Mamma Mia, whether on stage or the films? And if so...
I have. And I'm on my feet in front of the telly.
I was going to ask whether you would be up in the aisles dancing. But...
Oh, I absolutely. And ABBA tribute bands, the lot. I know it's shameful, isn't it? But I've done it all and I love it. Mamma Mia, here I go again. My, how can I resist?
Mamma Mia by ABBA there. Anna, your next track you have chosen is dedicated to your grown-up son, but I think it takes you back to the time when you were bringing him up. And I wondered, for you as a visually impaired person, how easy it was bringing up a young son as a visually impaired mother, or whether it was just fine, and with most of us who are visually impaired, we just get on with things and find a way to do stuff.
Yes, it's a wonderful question, Toby. I was very young. I was only 22 when my son was born, and I was on my own. So I was a single parent. And I think that you have to think back. It's 36 years ago and attitudes were different. So when I say I was on my own, I was on my own, and it was difficult to maintain some of my relationships. Some people felt that my actions of choosing to have a baby and not be married were, you know, just unacceptable. Others were very supportive, and I think there was a challenge, this perpetual challenge, from the moment that I knew I was pregnant, of people asking me, well, who's going to look after you? How are you going to look after your baby? You know, you who cannot see. And actually, for me, it was all incredibly straightforward. It was a non-issue. I just got on with it. And I loved every moment of being Alex's mother. And he's grown up into the most wonderful man. And, you know, I'm a granny now, and that has brought me so much joy in life. I cannot move away from the challenge I think that other people put in my path. And funnily enough, it was my first experience of ever actively being involved as a campaigner. And I met two very influential people at the time, both Mary Warnock, who I think is an extraordinary philosopher. And in fact, I'm sitting in a room now where if I turned around, I could look out across the field and see the house that she was born in.
Wow.
And the other person I met was Andreas Whittam Smith. Now, I mean, it's extraordinary to think back on it now that there was a law that discriminated against children who were born outside of marriage. And for me, that was my first experience of leaning into what I thought was a tremendous social injustice and seeing that change through, not by my effort, but by the great efforts of people far more capable and talented than me. I was very young and I was very driven, though, and it gave me a taste, I think, for not letting these things slide. If you see something and you can do something about it, if you feel it's unjust, get on and do it. Otherwise, keep quiet.
And back then, was there any support for visually impaired mothers or visually impaired parents at that time? Was there much out there that you could go to and get help and support?
No, I was never aware of anything, and I didn't ask for anything. I didn't look for anything. And I didn't, in all fairness, really probably feel I needed it. I felt I was a really competent mother. And I don't think you have to be perfect. Parents only have to be good enough. But I do remember it was a very cold, snowy winter at the time my son was born. And I remember 6 months later, as he was, you know, becoming very interactive and very alert and was always wide awake, we would often go out to the common very early in the morning, sometimes at 6:30 or 7. I'd take a picnic. I'd have breakfast on the common. We might even go back to sleep outside. And it was a very special time. It was probably in the last few weeks before I was thinking about returning to work. I had real time with him. And I also remember that we used to play a lot of very old music, old records that I'd had when I was a child, and we'd sort of dance around the living room together. But I also used to listen to the track that you're about to play, I think, an awful lot. I think the words probably speak for themselves. They express very much how I felt about my son and the absolute love that comes upon you as a parent, that you just, there's nothing to compare with it. And I think it's an experience that my own son has now had as he's become a parent. And certainly I remain undimmed in my absolute admiration and adoration of him.
May God's blessing keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you.
Forever Young there by Joan Byers, and I think fond memories for you, Anna, of your son growing up. Anna, your next track takes you to a time during the 80s and 90s when you were working hard, but I hope playing hard too at the same time. And you were doing lots of jobs. What sort of jobs were you doing at the time, and were you playing hard as well?
I that's a really interesting question, Toby. Actually, I was incredibly focused at this time on work and getting an education for myself. One of the things that I realised when my son was very little was that I was really underprepared to make a success of life in the way that I wanted to make a success of life. And I very much remember thinking, I need a plan. I've got myself in a hole here, and it's not a great place to be not particularly polished in educational achievement, and to be on your own with a small child. So I set about educating myself, and I was doing all kinds of jobs, from market research, and then I did a teaching qualification, and then I did some teaching jobs, and I gradually, incrementally pushed myself through Open University and things like that, until I was working in a company running training. I was running service provision for the employment service for people who were facing long-term unemployment. And I was pretty good at it, actually. I enjoyed it. I loved working with the clients that came through the door. I realized that I'm an immensely social person. And actually, there's a great reward in working closely with people and seeing people thrive and fly. I just loved that. And I think that's been the drive. I can't say I was probably playing terribly hard at that time. money was short. Things were pretty tough going in many ways. And certainly when my son was very little, there were times when I really wondered, how will I put food on the table? And there certainly were times where I might feed him and not feed myself, because there just wasn't that stretch. But I suppose throughout the late 80s, early 90s, things did begin to improve, and I developed an earning capacity, which really took the pressure off things. Then I was doing consultancy work, largely within the equalities space. And I was traveling a lot for work. I was going to Europe, and my son was growing up, and it was all happening very fast. And I think that the Blondie track we're about to listen to really expresses very nicely that pace of social change that was happening at that time, and how hard we were all working. And it's certainly true now. I see it in the next generation coming up. When you're raising your family, you have so little time to go off and play hard. Every minute of the day has to be accounted for, and it truly was like that. And I feel acutely aware of how very fortunate I've been. I've enjoyed enormous privilege in that space and love and connect of my early life. And I know what it's like to experience the hardship of wondering where the next meal is going to come from and how you are going to make ends meet. And that is a worry that I think no one should have to bear. And I've also been immensely lucky that my plan worked. I have succeeded in educating myself and improving my circumstance. And that is just a joy. I think I'm very lucky.
Automatic there by Blondie. Anna, we now move to Bulgaria in a way. You've spent a lot of time going backwards and forwards to Bulgaria. What is it that takes you back there to Bulgaria, and what sort of connection do you have with the country?
Well, what takes me back is a fabulous organisation called Karin Dom, which I've been involved with for more than 15 years now. Nearly 18, 19 years ago, I suppose, completely by accident, I was in Sofia and doing something which was sort of work business related. And I met the most extraordinary man called Ivan Stanchov. And Ivan had gone back to Bulgaria in 1989 after the regime change and had thought his original idea was, my God, we need housing for street children. I'll start an orphanage. And then very quickly realised the one thing this country doesn't need is another orphanage. But the situation for disabled people and children in particular was a perilous one. There were no services. And many people will be familiar with the orphanages in Romania. Yeah. And the situation wasn't dissimilar there in Bulgaria. So Ivan started Carindom and made an announcement in the paper that an English paediatrician would come, and people were queuing not to the end of the drive, but down the road across the underpass and right the way down the side of the dual carriageway, waiting for their children to be seen. So Carindom is now, I think, about 25 years old. And what Ivan did was to establish services, but also show with our alumni now who have graduated onto university, started their professional lives, that the role of disabled people in society is fulsome, and that the contribution that we have to make is rounded and part of the richness of human life. I think that Carindom is a remarkable place, and I'm very proud to have been associated with it. I'm still a board member there, and I have probably spent more than a year over the last 15, 20 years in Bulgaria. Not only do I now have an association with Carindom, I have friends there, and it is also one of the most beautiful places in Europe. It's one of the least populated as well. It's often thought of, you know, for its sort of cheap holidays and crime, but it is a staggeringly beautiful country, and the people are generous to a fault. The food is delicious. I've learned to cook Bulgarian food. I love Southeastern Europe. I think it's just beautiful there. And I've been very privileged in the people I've met, the people I've worked with. And I'm also immensely proud of my colleagues, led by the fabulous Maya at Carindom, and the services that they've kept rolling out, particularly right the way through this pandemic. No one has got left behind. It's quite remarkable.
And the track that you've chosen is from the London Bulgarian Choir. So there's obviously a big Bulgarian community here in the UK.
Interestingly, I do know a lot of Bulgarians who are living in London, and it's a very rich cultural life. The track that I've chosen next, Aliena Galina, The Maid Galina, really, I think, it is remarkable. The choir itself is made up of a great many internationals. So not everybody in the choir is Bulgarian, but everybody's singing in Bulgarian and coming together as a group, as one voice. It's led by the extraordinary Desi Stefanova, who has got an unrivaled voice. For anyone who has the opportunity to go and listen to the London Bulgarian Choir live, I cannot recommend it highly enough. It's visceral. It gets into your bones. And it's something that you feel, the music absolutely flowing through you. Desi Stefanova is a really remarkable woman, and what she has achieved musically with this choir is absolutely remarkable. So if you go, have the chance, grasp it. And it reminds me very powerfully of being in the Rhodope Mountains in Bulgaria.
The wonderful sound of the London Bulgarian Choir there. Anna, for your next track, you've chosen one, I think, which is sung by a friend of yours, Rory Campbell.
Yes, I have. Yeah, I have. And actually, I almost couldn't get through this without choosing something by Rory. The track I've chosen, I think, expresses beautifully the connection that people have between each other, and that drive for human contact and connection, friendship, love, familial relationships, longevity. This is the stuff of life, and I absolutely love it.
And Rory Campbell is a singing coach as well as being a singer himself. Have you had any coaching from him, and do you think you could sing this song?
I definitely couldn't, but I do have a very happy memory in his house in Padbury in Buckinghamshire when I was growing up. Now, his mother was a singer, a very famous singer, actually, called Lisbeth Webb. And she did have a go at teaching me how to sing. She taught me, I think, out of desperation, a technique called speaking the part. But I do remember the warmth of those afternoons and of Liz and her great company and just having this wonderful generosity from Rory's mother. It was very lovely.
I've got you under my skin. I've got you deep in the heart of me. So deep in my heart that you really are part of me. I've got you under my skin.
I've Got You Under My Skin by Rory Campbell, one of your great friends. Anna, you are chair of the RNIB. How do you see the future of the RNIB now that you are the chairperson?
Well, that absolutely is at the nub of the matter, isn't it? RNIB's been through a very introspective phase. It's probably not the most glorious years of our long history over the last few years. I think we have to modernise as an organisation. I think we have to be more outward looking, and we have to listen to our customers, our service users. We have to think about what's the world likely to be like in 5, 10, 15, 20 years time, and how can we build resilience into RNIB so that everything we do at the heart of all those decisions are the needs of blind and partially sighted people. So great to have these wonderful services like the library. And as you know, Toby, I've got a bit of a vested interest because Bookshare is my baby from the dim and distant past. But also, how can we develop new relevant services? And how can we keep improving what we already do? So I think it's a really exciting time to be joining RNIB. There's a heck of a lot to do, and it will always be thus because the world never stands still. So no matter how good a job I do and how good a job the team do, and they are doing a fabulous job, there will always be more to do. It will never be enough, and we have to keep moving in order to make sure that nobody gets left behind. And there are a lot of people that we're not reaching, and I'd like to increase that reach. And I know that that's also the shared ambition of my colleagues. So I think it's a time when there is everything to play for, and I'm looking forward to an outward facing positive future for RNIB, but most importantly for the people we're here to serve.
Anna, we now come to that song that you have chosen that you would like to pass on that might give hope to people for the future. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
Well, I have chosen a Nina Simone track and it's called Feeling Good. This is my absolute go-to piece of music. So if I've got something tricky coming up, I'll put this on at top volume, more dancing around the kitchen. I love the feeling of movement and power that one has in this song. You know, you can't help but raise up your arms and celebrate life. So it's a very, very powerful sound. It's also, it's rather sexy and it's rather pushy. and it's got it all going on. And it doesn't matter whether I think you wanted to recover from a moment of sorrow or whether you wanted to celebrate some magical event in life, this music makes me feel good.
Thank you, Anna Tyler, for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Oh, thank you, Toby. It's been an absolute blast. And I realise what a frightful old sentimentalist I am, but I've loved it. Thank you.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me.